It's planting season, and it's not too late to make sure your crops grow up fed and happy. Regardless of your spring crop, Fed and Happy offers a variety of worm-casting solutions in liquid and solid form to supercharge your soil, your yields, and your profitability. For fast, vibrant germination and seedling growth, mix your seed with Fed and Happy's screened granular castings pre-drilling. The Fed and Happy liquid seed treat and extracts offer the ideal mix of soluble solids loaded with living beneficial biology, mycorrhizal fungi, humates, and more. The Fed and Happy small spreadable castings are ideal for fast, easy soil incorporation. The large offer long-term stability and soil growth. But you don't have to figure this out on your own. Just call 833-GO-WORMS to speak with our farm team experts for a fast turnaround on a custom solution for your needs. Fare better against pests, disease, drought, and other potential hazards this season with Fed and Happy worm castings. Visit fedandhappy.com for a healthy harvest and any lawn, garden, and tree care needs. Available for pickup and on-farm delivery. That's fedinhappy.com. Or call 833-GO-WORMS. Happy planting. Welcome. You're listening to Casually Baked, the podcast. Home base for the can of curious. Thanks for tuning in.
It's a hard time. We had a hard time. Together. Together. Yes, it's a hard time. We had a hard time. Together.
Hi, y'all. I'm Joe, your host and cannabis lifestyle guide. Over the next 3 weeks, we're talking with some outstanding women in cannabis about everything from strategically building your business or brand to social equity to menopause and women's health. And we're getting this girl power party started with arguably the most celebrated woman in cannabis. Nancy Whiteman is the founder of Wana Brands, the largest edible company in North America by market share. Wana manufactures and sells gummies in Colorado and licenses its intellectual property to partners who manufacture, distribute, and sell Wana brand gummies across the United States, including California, Arizona, Illinois, Michigan, and Florida, giving Wana a total footprint of 12 U.S. states currently and across Canada. Nancy leads Wana's strategic vision and is instrumental in new market expansion. She shares the challenges of an industry growing exponentially and without diversity and inclusivity. And Nancy has sound advice for women in the cannabis industry. But first, a word from our sponsor, MJ Relief. If your muscles and joints need some TLC without the THC, check out MJ Relief, the hemp-based CBD muscle rub, PhD formulated for what aches and pains you. Besides being a pain-relieving, skin-soothing muscle rub, MJ Relief contains no synthetic scents, is paraben-free, and non-GMO. And bonus, a little goes a long way and will up-level your next massage. And the 0.5-ounce MJ Minis, they make excellent stocking stuffers or Secret Santa gifts. So right now, when you buy tins of MJ Relief, you'll save 10% using promo code CASUALLYBAKED at checkout. Shop online at MJSkinRelief.com. The Sustainability Roll-Up is presented by OCB Rolling Papers. In perfect harmony with natural, sustainable practices, it's always been the OCB signature to provide the highest quality, responsibly sourced, and sustainably crafted rolling papers. As the holiday season approaches, rather than playing roulette with the supply chain backlog, save your peace of mind by shopping locally and minimally. Imagine if we all support local and regional makers, farmers, and businesses. We'd stimulate the economy where it has the most meaningful impact, in our own backyard. And what if we went for quality over quantity this year and got one special something instead of a load of crap. This one defiant act disrupts the pattern of mass consumption while bringing back into focus what actually matters in this life. It's not about having the hottest pair of sneakers and every toy known to man or an outfit for every potential occasion. It's about sharing love and creating points of connection. And speaking of connection, I highly encourage the idea of gifting unforgettable experiences you can share with your person. Perhaps even a cannabis lifestyle session with yours truly, or a reservation for a casually baked getaway to Northern California's wine and weed country in the spring. Or you can let the cannabis lover in your life choose their own adventure with virtual casually baked bucks. They can be used for coaching, experiences, or merch in the online store at casuallybaked.com. And if you're shopping for a cannabis newbie, gift them with the skills of joint rolling. Get their Roll With Me starter kit at ocbusa.com/baked. You'll get four booklets of OCB and a rolling tray for only $4.99. This bundle is worth $20 and is around for a limited time. And because variety is the spice of life, enjoy sampling the entire line of OCB products. Of course, you must be 21 and older to buy OCB rolling papers and to follow the natural wonders of OCB on social at @OCB_USA. Be sure to ask for OCB wherever you buy your papers. You'll find links to the OCB special offer and the latest episode of Roll With Me in the podcast show notes at casuallybaked.com. You can also catch the Roll With Me video series live streaming on the Casually Baked YouTube channel and the Highly Responsible Canna Consumers Facebook group, with replays on the WeedTube and Instagram. If you haven't checked out last week's podcast about CBD, Craig's got something to say about it. Yo, Joe, just saw that the CBD episode dropped. Stoked to check it out on my 6-hour drive tomorrow night. Just wanted to say a big-ass thank you for making this podcast. The fact that I asked a question and there is a podcast about it in like, what, 3 weeks is unbelievable. Your commitment and dedication is commendable, and it's greatly appreciated. I can't wait to listen and spread the podcast to everyone. CBD is the cannabinoid to get people talking, curious, and using plant medicine. Again, you rock, and I love all of the content you're creating. I eat it all up, never stop. If you're like Craig and you are picking up what I'm putting down, please rate and review Casually Baked the podcast on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. That one small action helps other canna curious folks find highly responsible discussions like this one with Nancy about her journey bootstrapping a wildly successful cannabis business and the importance of intentionally carving out your lane. We also examine the gummy craze, THCV, female consumers, and being a woman in a male-dominated cannabis industry. So smoke them if you got them and settle in. It's time to get casually baked.
I got the bottle of wine, the high dollar kind. I got the West Coast smoke, but I better just take one toke.
I am here with Nancy Whiteman today. She is the CEO of Wanna Brands, and as far as I'm concerned, the most famous woman in cannabis right now. So, Nancy, I know you are super, super busy. So thank you for hitting pause to chat with me today.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Certainly. So when I talk about you being the most celebrated woman in cannabis right now, for those that don't know, Wanna Brands just recently was a part of the largest transaction ever in the edibles space with the Canopy Growth deal, where they received $298 million upfront in return for options to buy all of Wanna Brands when we federally legalize here in the United States. So first of all, like, bravo, sister.
Thank you.
How does that feel? So
You know, it feels incredible and a lot of different emotions. It's an amazing experience and very grateful for it.
Yes. And the thing that makes it even more exciting to me is the fact that Wana Brands is bootstrapped.
Yes.
Like, you don't owe shit to anybody.
That is true. So we started Wana Brands 11 years ago, actually. So we're kind of one of the OG in the edible space, I would say. And it is true. We were able to do something kind of unusual. And I can talk about what the circumstances were that led us to be able to do that. But we were able to bootstrap the company with a very, very modest amount of upfront money. And then for the last 11 years, we've just been growing the company organically without taking in any outside investors. So it's been an adventure.
Beautiful. So can you think of an early decision that you made that has made such a huge difference in the trajectory of your company?
Oh, yes. I think probably one of the most impactful decisions we made was to really focus on the gummy category before it was the hyper-competitive category that it is today. This was sort of an interesting story because we are based in Colorado. And, we, like many, many early edibles companies, just tried a little bit of everything. And I think that's very typical of startups, which is it takes a little bit of time to find your footing, if you will. And so we had everything from infused nuts to infused beef jerky to baked goods to candy. But I saw that there was a company that was taking off that was in the gummy space. And they were using a different model than the one we ended up using. They were purchasing off the shelf gummy candies and spraying them with hash oil. But I could see that they were selling a lot. So we had the idea to start making gummies from scratch and to infuse them in the cooking process. And so we did that and ultimately so did literally hundreds of other companies. But I think the thing that made it a very good decision for us is that we really started to focus on it. We started to really say, what can we do to make this the most premier, most delicious gummy that anybody has ever tasted, but also the most effective and the most consistent and the highest quality from an experience point of view. So it really was that focus on what ended up being the leading category by far in edibles that I think was one of our very early, very good decisions.
Yeah. And you know, it's so crazy because I'm not a huge gummy person, but I know how difficult it is to make candies and make, a good gummy. And, and when I have purchased them, and of course, back in the day when I would get them and you accidentally leave it in your car and then you open up the container and you just have like this one blob of mush. Yes. And so y'all did all those little things to make sure this thing passes the heat test. Right. And,
we did. We always joke about avoiding the gummy goo, right? We don't want products that melt. But you're absolutely right that for any product that you decide you're going to focus on, there's a million little subtle ways to keep improving it and keep making it better, and never to sort of sit back on your laurels and say we've got it nailed. We've created the ultimate gummy because we really are always in a state of continuous improvement.
And I think that's just great advice in general for life. Like, we're constantly changing and evolving and tweaking to get better and better. And so if, we should be doing that as humans and mm-hmm. business people. And so, of course, letting that spill over into the products that we create or, the shows that we create like I do. Like, I put a lot of love into every episode and people hear that, yes. they can tell that you've done the extra work. And so, you create a loyal fan base in that regard.
I agree. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Just remind me to talk about brand loyalty and women later.
Okay, great. I will. I was going to say one of the things that I think is part and parcel of what you're talking about, whether it's a podcast or an edibles company, is that you want to be known for something, right? A lot of early players, I think, tried to get into every single product category. And the truth is, it's really hard to excel in all of them. So when I think about some of the companies that I consider to be the most successful brands, typically you'll have an association with a particular product that they make. You know, with Wana, it happens to be gummies, but everybody has one or two things that they're really known for. And then many times people begin to add other products in. But that's the other thing that I would say was an early good decision, was not to try to extend to too many product formats.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hear that a lot when you getting into the coaching space. I do mentoring for an organization called SCORE, and you do small business mentoring. And a lot of people, when they come in and they have problems, it's because they're spread too thin. They're trying to do too many things, be too many things to too many people. And so focusing in and honing, you know, you have created a huge reputation in the edible space, and y'all, you're a multi-state operator, although I think you went about that a little bit different than a lot of other brands too. So tell me what y'all did in that regard.
Well, a lot of times when we talk about multi-state operators, we're talking about vertically integrated models where people are cultivating, processing and manufacturing and dispensing. And that's an ambitious business model because those are three completely different types of businesses. People who know how to grow, people know how to process, people who know how to sell and create retail environments, three different sets of skill sets. So when you start thinking about that multiplied by 10 states, for example, because we have to recreate in every state we go into, it's almost like running 30 separate businesses. So I'm not smart enough for that. So we really just focused on the manufacturing and processing side of it. And we chose to do it in an asset-light model. And by that, what I mean is that we didn't attempt to take licenses in all the markets that we went into. What we did instead was to create a center of excellence in Colorado, where we really had nailed all of the production processes and then built out a team that could then take those and translate them into different markets. And so that did a couple things for us. That allowed us to go quickly, and it allowed us to go with a relatively low capital expense because we were not getting licenses and building out facilities in every state. So that's how we approached it.
I like that. And the fact that, you know, depending on where you are, you'll find a little bit different version of Wana products in each of these markets. So you're able to really hone in on what does this particular market want and make that happen without having to change your whole model.
Absolutely. I think one of the sweet spots for a multi-state operator like me as a brand, as like Wana, is that you have to hit this balance of localizing for market tastes. And that might be, gosh, for some reason, everybody seems to go crazy about raspberry here or whatever it might be. But also keeping the brand consistency as much as possible from market to market. And sometimes that is a regulatorily driven thing, whether it's differences in packaging or labeling, or even differences in dosage or product format. So it is impossible, given the current structure, to have everything be completely consistent from market to market, which gives us the opportunity to do some customization for markets.
So when I look at a gummy and I'm going to purchase something like that, for me, I'm always like, where's the one that's not coated in sugar? You know, what's one that's got a moderate dosage? I liked, you know, 25 milligrams is my, like, you know, if I were going to take an edible, that's my sweet spot. So if I am going to have to eat a couple of gummies, what's going to be that added sugar count? So I always look for somebody that's doing it in a way where they're using, you know, better sweeteners and it's like at a low glycemic index and things like that. So what is Wana doing in regard to the low sugar stuff? Do y'all have things on the market now like that? Are you rolling things out that are good for the low glycemic folks?
Well, you know, one of the reasons that I think that gummies have become a popular format is that unless you should have the tolerance that would enable you to eat a whole, you know, package of them, which most people do not, they're a relatively low sugar product already, just by the nature of the fact that they're a small format. So I think our gummies have 3 grams of carbs, I believe, and all of that being sugar. but we do, for example, we have switched over completely in Colorado and many of our other markets to using organic tapioca syrup instead of high fructose corn syrup, for example, which does have a different impact on your blood sugar. So is it a no sugar product? It's not a no sugar product, but as long as you're eating one of them, most people find it pretty tolerable.
I had a woman in the studio the other day. She's late 60s, I believe. And she was saying that her gummy is her dessert. You know, mm-hmm. she's a fit woman that, you know, and is watching what she eats. And so, you know, when she goes to bed at night, she has the gummy with THC and maybe some CBN or something. But she's like, this is dessert for me. And I'm like, I don't know that I'm that disciplined, but I appreciate the concept.
That is funny. But, you know, it is interesting because there are other edible formats out there that you just have to eat more of them. And, you know, chocolate, for example, or something along those lines. So it is nice to have an option that is a lower sugar option. And I think one of the things that's interesting about the gummy format is that it was in some ways sort of popularized, that's hard to say, for us through the vitamin industry, because everybody got used to eating one of them, right? You don't open up your multivitamin gummies in the morning and say, gosh, that was delicious. I think I'll have 4 or 5 of those, right? You eat one of them. And it's well understood as a platform, if you will, for delivering medicine and delivering supplements.
Yeah, I agree. I have a lot of people in my life that do that gummy vitamin thing. And, you know, you just like jump on board, like this is the wave. This is what people are doing. You know, I'm not trying to get them to do something different. Like, let's right. just go with it. So speaking of, you recently wrote a white paper that was focusing on women and product development and branding to women. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as we're talking about what are these habits that people already have, you know, what were some of the things that you found when doing the homework for that white sure. paper?
Well, first of all, excuse me, fighting some allergies here. The paper is called Building New Foundations in the Cannabis Industry. And it was a project that was conceived by the ARCView Group and NCIA. And it had many different papers in it. Our paper was one specifically focused on product development and branding as it related to women. And I think one of the first things that I would call out is that inherently as a brand, I think you're going to run into difficulties if you think that women are a monolithic group. They are not. Different women respond differently. We see tremendous age differences by group even. So, you know, people will say, oh, well, women, they like edibles and they like, you know, topicals. And that is true. But if you look at Gen X women, which are actually the fastest growing cannabis using group, they actually index much more heavily towards inhalables, right? So you can't, one of the first things to say is, you can't just say, I'm here to hit the woman market. You've got to really think about who it is that you're trying to reach and why are you trying to reach them. But the other thing that I would say is that there were a number of myths that got busted in this paper. And we were very fortunate. We partnered with this particular paper with Headset, which is one of the leading analytics company in the industry. And also the Brightfield Group also contributed some data. And they helped us really look at what the reality is of how women use cannabis and how they purchase cannabis. And we did sort of a little myth buster part of that paper, which was kind of fun and interesting. One of the things, for example, I sort of mentioned it before, is this notion that somehow women really don't like to smoke weed. They like to just consume edibles and rub things on their body. Well, that isn't actually true. Women also really like to smoke weed. Now, but interestingly, even within that, there's nuance, right? Because what women do over-index on are formats that are a little bit easier to use. So pre-rolls, vape pens versus dabbing versus rolling your own joint. So maybe they buy less flour, maybe they buy less hash, but they do like inhalables and they also do like edibles and topicals. Now, the other interesting thing about the edibles and the topicals that we see, though, is that women particularly over-indexed in things that were health and wellness focused, much more so than men. The three big things that you see really everybody using cannabis for, and then women really much more so than men, is sleep, anxiety, and depression. So products that are specially formulated for those conditions do, in fact, do very well with women. They over-index for women. So there's a lot of nuance to thinking about creating products. In general, there's a lot of nuance to it. But even when you supposedly narrow it down and say, I'm creating products for the female market, there's still a lot of complexity and a lot of things that you need to think about.
So I am one of your Gen X flower loving, you know, pot smoking women. And I recently this year started learning to roll my own joints because I thought, this is ridiculous, Joanna. Like, you go to a party, people expect you to be the master of ceremonies. And if you can't roll a good joint, like, what kind of a lifestyle guide are you? So, you know, I have been practicing rolling joints all year because I don't necessarily love when I get a pre-roll. You know, I like the fresh flower and I can tell a difference. And so, you know, I think when you start getting more sophisticated in your relationship with cannabis, you also start getting a little bit more confident in changing lanes and trying out new stuff.
I think that's very true. And in fact, the data sort of bears you out, I would say, because, you know, one of the other myths I think about women versus men and their cannabis use is that women are somehow less sophisticated or less knowledgeable. But the truth is that women are key consumers of premium cannabis products, including fresh flower, as you're saying. And they do appreciate the nuances of the more premium type products.
And I think women, they're more willing to do the homework. So I can see them elevating to better products when they know better, they want to buy better.
Right. And that great quote from who, Maya Angelou, when you know better, you do better.
Yes.
Right? It's interesting too, because one of the things that the research does show is that men, for example, are perhaps more likely to buy something that's strain specific than a woman is, right? And so they have more confidence. Perhaps they feel that they have more expertise, right? But it also opens up an opportunities for brands because, as you were just saying, I think women are very open to education and being educated. So they will tend to gravitate to brands who make that investment in helping people really understand about their products and educating people on their products.
You know, and when I first started doing this and I would help, this was before Prop 64, so back when it was just medically legal with 215, I would help people go in, get their medical card, and then I was finding that they weren't going into the dispensary. They were apprehensive about going in and using their medical card after they got it. And most of the time it was because they didn't want to feel overwhelmed and not know what they were doing. They didn't want to be the newbie in the store. And so I started going in and doing the handholding along with it. And, you know, and that's how I ended up creating this little resource guide, because I'm like, women really do. They want to know all the information before they got started.
You know, that's such an interesting point. We have a new product line in Colorado, and we're going to be rolling it out in the rest of the country, but we call it the Optimals line. And it is health and wellness focused in that it's condition specific, or it's use case specific, I should say. So our first two products in that line were a sleep product and also a product that we called Wanna Fit. It's our first THCV product. And THCV, for any listeners who are not familiar with it, is a rare cannabinoid that actually helps with weight regulation and energy and focus. So one of the things that we did to try to address just what you were talking about, women not going into dispensaries, was we created a little concierge program with a really terrific group of cannabis nurses called Leaf 411. And people who are interested can actually make an appointment to have a Leaf 411 concierge go into the dispensary with them, explain the product to them, make sure that they're comfortable. Because I think, you know, our belief is that I'm a huge fan of cannabis for recreational purposes. So let me preface everything by that. But
me too.
I think that cannabis is just such a powerful health and wellness platform, really. And so when we think about how do we grow this market, how do we keep this industry growing, it's not going to be sort of duking it out, if you will, over the recreational users who maybe are trying this brand and can be lured to try that brand if you charge $2 less. It's going to be brands who figure out how to bring new people into the marketplace, right, who grow the pie. And so just what you're saying, how do we make the dispensary experience more comfortable for women? How do we help them feel confident that they're understanding what they're getting and that they're making good choices for whatever effect they're looking for?
100% agree. Yeah, that was one of the main catalysts for me starting this podcast. I was like, traffic's too bad in the Bay Area for me to get around and make a difference. Like, I need to get a megaphone and start, you know, speaking outside of this California cannabis bubble, because they're, you know, if you're in this environment, probably just like in Colorado, there are a lot of assumptions made about your education level on cannabis simply by living in a state where it's legal.
Absolutely. And a lot of times those assumptions are not accurate. And particularly for women who are older, a lot of times they'll go into a dispensary and the person who's helping them is, you know, a 24-year-old guy with a lot of tattoos and piercings. And he's very, you know, very much part of the industry. And you have a woman who's 45 or 50 going in, maybe she's got some issues that are a little sensitive to be talking about. Is that actually the person who she wants to say, hey, I'm having really bad menstrual cramps, you know?
Yeah, what do you recommend?
What do you recommend, you know? So, you know, you have to be, as a brand, as a dispensary, of course, but also as a brand, thinking very holistically about the experience that people have with your products. Everything in terms of how you brand it, but also how you sell it and how you help to create a retail environment or a home delivery environment, if that's possible in your market, that actually is consistent with how women like to be treated when they're shopping.
Yes. Now, since we're talking about how women like to be treated, I recently read about the MJ BizCon conference. Bearded Bros had published an article that a woman wrote about the female's experience at a cannabis conference, and specifically this year's MJ BizCon. Mm-hmm. Were you at MJ BizCon this year?
I was.
What was your experience before we get started in that?
Well, I'm a little old for those particular experiences that they were describing. And I think with my level of notoriety, shall we say, it's less likely probably to happen to me. But I think it speaks to a larger issue that all kidding aside, I would like to address. And that really is inclusivity in the cannabis industry. And unfortunately, through a variety of circumstances, which I can hit on if you like, the industry has become very male dominated. And what has happened is that a lot of the smaller businesses, like myself, when I got started, are getting boxed out, and particularly in markets with very limited licenses. Because what happens in a limited license market is there becomes intense competition to get that license. And so, and sometimes, you know, people have to be able to show that they've got, you know, $500,000 in free cash, that they have a lease signed, that they have a facility, that they have a powerful team behind them. It's not unusual to be spending hundreds of thousands of dollars before you even find out whether you're going to get the license. And so what does that do? It ends up favoring the people who have historically had the easiest access to capital and that tends to be white men. And so what we're having is an industry that is not growing in terms of its diversity and its inclusiveness. And in fact, has created a situation where it's actually difficult for people of color who were the very deliberately targeted victims of the war on drugs. We still have over 40,000 people in jail for minor cannabis violations. They are the ones who are having the most challenges accessing their place in the industry. So this Bearded Brothers article and the experience of the women that they were talking to, part and parcel of it is the cannabis industry. And part of it is just, we still have a lot of work to go. We still have a long ways to go to have women treated with dignity and respect in this industry and in many other industries.
So what advice do you have for women, you know, you being one of the female leaders in an industry in all of North America, what have you learned in just your years of business that have helped you kind of navigate these waters?
Well, I think it always helps to navigate waters when you are coming from a place of strength, right? Now, I didn't start out in a place of strength. I started out like many people who might be listening to this podcast, a tiny little company with very limited resources. But what I would say is that I always took myself seriously, right? Even if other people didn't right away, I always did. And I think that energy gets communicated out to people. And I think you have to control, this is going to sound a little odd, but you have to control your eagerness for success, right? You have to not let that eagerness allow you to be treated in ways that you don't want to be treated. You have to not allow it to make deals that you shouldn't be making. You need it to not let yourself override your strong intuition about whether a person or a situation is the right one for you. And people often ask me, you know, what are the worst mistakes that you've made? And it's always people. The worst mistakes I made were people. I made the bets on wrong people. And a lot of times, and I would say this is true in life, not just in business, the seeds of whatever goes wrong in a relationship were right there from the start. And we just choose not to look at them. And sometimes we choose not to look at them in business because we're so eager for the deal that we override our instincts on the situation.
God, that's so true. So in the beginning of my time in cannabis, I was also still doing corporate storytelling for other people outside of the space. And I was the voice of the CEO of an international matchmaking firm. So I was giving advice on love and dating and all that stuff all the time. And that is the thing, like, recognize these red flags early and often because they're not going away and it just gets worse.
And I have to say, you know, I always tell that to people when they're negotiating a deal, let it take a little bit of time because you learn a lot about somebody when you're negotiating with them. And what you see often at the beginning of the relationship is basically what you've got. If you have somebody who's difficult to deal with, who doesn't think win-win, who doesn't demonstrate that they have shared values with you, really pay attention to those things. Because as you said, it's not going to go away. It's probably only going to get worse.
Yeah, that is good advice. So let's see, what else do I want to ask you? Okay, so yes, so when we're talking about the boys club thing, how do we handle as women, like when we're in a meeting and we start getting the whole mansplaining thing happening, you know, and you're like, I know this information, like we're in the trenches together. Let's get over you mansplaining and let's get to business. Like, how do you maneuver that in a graceful way?
Well, I have always been a huge believer in using humor strategically. You know, it's such an effective way to not have to turn to somebody and say, are you kidding me? You're actually telling me that? You know, if you can do it in a humorous way that puts the person on notice that you already knew that and you know, that, oh, thank you so much for sharing that, you know, whatever humor you can bring to the situation is generally going to be more effective and more comfortable for everybody. Because people who are mansplaining, men who are mansplaining, they're usually coming from, you know, not a place of overtly trying to put you down or, you know, make you feel less than. They're doing it because it's a communication style. And what you need to do is you need to let them know that that communication style is not especially effective in this situation. But, you know, again, doing it with humor and not with aggression, I think works better.
Yes. And I will say that, you know, me along with probably most other women, when somebody tells me to relax, that's the last thing that I do.
Yeah, you want to say, does that work for you when somebody tells you to relax? Do you find that relaxing? Because I don't.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's like the hair on the back of my neck stands up. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. Coming at him.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I do say that, you know, eventually as people get to know you and get to know what you're really made of, they mess around with this stuff less and less and less.
Yeah. And,
that's,
you know,
my experience.
I was really disappointed to see, you know, what all was written in that article about MJ Biz and how these different women had these experiences. But I've got to admit, I've had all of those experiences myself, you know, trying to figure out how to ask if, you know, are we having this conversation because you're interested in my business model or because you think that you can have a power position and persuade me to sleep with you? And frankly, I haven't gone to a cannabis event, you know, since all of the COVID stuff mm-hmm. started. I'll go to Emerald Cup in December, but I've just kind of laid off of it and felt really good about that decision.
Well, you know, I think the other thing is that you have to give yourself permission to walk out, right? You don't have to put up with this. And when you start to give up your power in that way, like, I better play along with this because maybe they'll fund me, it's all over as far as I'm concerned. You know, you're setting up a situation where you will not be treated with respect.
Yeah. That's so true. So now tell me if you've got this canopy growth deal done, $298 million burning a hole in your pocket. So what do y'all have planned for first Wana? And then what are you doing now?
Well, Wana doesn't change a whole bunch because, as you accurately noted at the beginning of this conversation, this was not an acquisition. It was an option for an acquisition post-legalization. And the reason for that is that, you know, Canopy is a Canadian company. It trades on the Toronto Exchange, and it also trades on the NASDAQ. And the NASDAQ does not allow plant-touching companies in the United States. So Canopy can trade on the NASDAQ because it does not have any direct plant-touching properties or companies in the U.S. They're all in Canada. So the structure of the deal was due to that. And what it also means is that I retain ownership of Wana, and I'm remaining the CEO of Wana. So we are continuing to execute on our primary strategies, which have been really the same for a while. It's to get to attractive markets as quickly as we can, and also to invest heavily in innovation and R&D so that we can develop highly differentiated, effective, fantastic products for consumers for the long haul that will turn us into a 100-year brand. You know, I'm not interested in this current cycle of, you know, everybody duking it out for who can race to the bottom the quickest and lose money the fastest. I don't think that's the way to build a long-term sustainable brand.
You know, it's funny to see now every brand that I know releasing a gummy line in time for the holidays. Like, all these gummies are coming out right now. And mm-hmm. I mean, for you, it must feel so good to just be like, I knew it. I nailed it. Yes. because you don't have to do that. You just keep like honing and diversifying and doing this one thing in an excellent way. So I love that. Yeah, you do this deal and you're like, it's business as usual over here. We're doing what we're doing. There's nothing, no gear shifting happening.
No gear shifting happening. If anything, I hope we are able just to pick up the pace. You know, I was sharing with our employees the day that we announced the deal that there's this wonderful expression that I like that, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I said, you know, we've been going alone and fast for 11 years, and now it's time for us to go together and also to go fast. And hopefully by going together, we can go even faster. So, you know, that's my hope. We certainly spent a lot of time talking with Canopy while we were in the getting to know one another phase to make sure that we really did have shared values and that they saw the industry the same way that we saw the industry and that our values and our hopes for the industry were aligned. So, you know, in terms of what happens next, I hope that, you know, we are going to be able to deliver on what looks like it's going to be a really productive, wonderful partnership between us.
Outstanding. And that's also great advice. You know, making sure you're looking through the same lens before everyone mm-hmm. signs on the dotted line. So what about you? What are you doing to celebrate yourself? Like, are you taking a vacation? I mean, when yeah. we got on this call, you were doing 1,000, you know, points of paperwork. You're yeah. still going.
Yeah, no, I'm still going hard. Yes, I do love, love, love to travel. And COVID has certainly put a little bit of a crimp in that, as it has for everybody. In fact, today is the first day that we're opening up to international travel, right?
So I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it is. All right. It's okay. A special day. I was actually at LaGuardia yesterday, and everybody was sort of a buzz about what it was going to be like tomorrow when all the international travel started up again. So yes, a lot of fantastic travel. I'm hoping to take my kids to Italy in the spring. So,
where in Italy are you going? I lived in Bologna for 16 months when I was figuring out what I wanted to do to get paid to be myself. It was my midlife retirement.
We'll have to chat post podcast here, but certainly Rome, which I've never spent much time there. I have been to Florence. I'd like to go, you know, spend some time in more of the village towns of Tuscany and. Yeah, there's a lot of Italy's fabulous, as you know.
Yes, it is. Well, is there anything that I didn't ask you that you think is important to round out our conversation or advice to women?
You know, there's, I guess, one more thing that I would say just for women specifically in the brand space. This is probably good advice for any space that you find yourself in, but it's particularly critical for the brand space. I would say that, these days are not like they were 11 years ago. You can't do what we did, come out with, you know, 15 different products and just sort of throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks, which is what we were able to do back in the day. I would say now, if you're thinking about a brand, to try to get as much clarity as you can about who you want that brand to be, what you want that brand to be, but also how you're going to differentiate that brand. It's highly competitive. This industry is already exceedingly competitive and becoming more so every day, as you said. Everybody and their brother is releasing a gummy. And this isn't just in the gummy space. You just really need to have a clear vision of what you're trying to do, because you really have to engineer your whole company around that. So if you think I have a cost advantage of some sort, you know, I can get THC at a really low cost, or my manufacturing costs are really low or whatever, and you think I want to be a value player, then be a value player. You know, really pursue that. If you want to be an innovator and to have highly differentiated products, you need to structure your whole company around the understanding that that's what you're trying to do. I think it's the brands that sort of hang out in the middle that really have a hard time and struggle because they're not cost leaders and they're not innovation leaders.
That is good advice. And then when you started talking about the cost stuff, it made me think again about this THCV product that you're coming out with. And I know, you know, that's a minor cannabinoid. And so it is more expensive, or it has been more expensive to work with. Are the prices on the various cannabinoids, like, is that coming down, or is that going to be a premium product that, you know, costs more?
I would say both. It is coming down, but it's still more expensive. So it will be a premium product. But, you know, how many women or and men do you know if you said, what would you pay to lose some weight?
Yeah. Well, and I call it skinny weed.
Yeah.
I'm exactly. Like, do you want skinny weed or do you want the munchies?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, the price is coming down, but it's, you know, it's still not down to THC prices.
All right. Well, I figured, I just was curious and knew you would know. So Nancy, I so appreciate your time. I love what you're doing. I am just thrilled for your success and for you being such a wonderful representative for women in the cannabis space. So thank you for your time. And in the comments, Tina Hopkins says, you ladies keep up the great work. So we don't have any questions. We just got some love.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me. I super appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you.
WANA expects to have license agreements in place in more than 20 U.S. states prior to the end of 2022. Upon federal legalization and exercising its right to acquire WANA, Canopy Growth will own and operate WANA's vertically integrated facility in Colorado, as well as its rapidly growing licensing division. This deal expands upon the coverage provided by the company's existing right to acquire Acreage Holdings, Inc., a U.S. multi-state operator, and the company's conditional ownership interest in TerrAscend Corp., another U.S. multi-state operator. Canopy Growth is making some serious cannabis chess moves to become the global powerhouse of our industry, people. And though I don't like the idea of a cannabis industry that mirrors mainstream media, I am proud to see a bootstrapping female entrepreneur succeed in such a big way. And if you're inspired by Nancy's story, I hope you'll share this podcast with your smoke circle. I rounded up some of the excellent insights Nancy shared with us. You'll find those and more info about the things we discussed today in the podcast 212 show notes at casuallybaked.com. As always, email your requests or canna curious questions through the website or DM me on social. I'm at Casually Baked on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and the WeedTube. And if you find value in the quality cannabis content I'm churning out every week, please become a podcast patron for $5 per month at patreon.com/casuallybaked. However you choose to support this highly responsible cannabis movement, thanks for doing your part to Puff Puff, pass it on. Casually Baked, the podcast, was created, recorded, and produced by yours truly. Editing and sound design are in the capable hands of Arnav Gupta. The podcast theme music is by my highly talented friend Seth Walker. If you aren't familiar with Seth's music, you can find High Time on his album Gotta Get Back wherever you're buying your music these days. I know he didn't create High Time for me, but it sure as shit sounds like he did, right? I hope you'll tune in next time. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Cannabis Health Radio is a podcast about stories from people around the world who have used cannabis to deal with serious ailments, many of them life-threatening. My name is Ian Jessup. My co-host Corey Yelland is no stranger to the devastating emotional impact faced by so many people receiving a death sentence diagnosis from a doctor. Told she only had months to live with anal canal cancer, Corey researched and immediately began using cannabis oil to eliminate her cancer and has been cancer-free for more than a decade. She told herself that if it worked, she would spend the rest of her life helping others, which she does tirelessly every day. When you listen to our podcast, you'll hear many stories like Corey's, along with others who have used cannabis oil for many more ailments besides cancer, such as chronic pain, PTSD, MS, and many, many more. As one of our guests said, "Your podcast gave me the confidence to save my own life." We regularly get messages from listeners who have heard our podcast and use cannabis to solve a serious health issue of their own or that of a loved one. We hope you listen to these stories and be as inspired and moved as we are with each and every episode.